Many years ago, actually some decades ago, Helen Johnstone, our diocesan secretary in Northern California, she wrote an article for the newsletter while Bishop Lamb was away. And I saved that article, and I often bring it out for Epiphany preaching, as I did this week. Helen wrote, "This week, my corner of the office has taken on a certain stillness, not from lack of work, but from something else. This rare stillness offers a chance to take a deep breath and contemplate the newness of the year and all that lies ahead. Not with a sense of being overwhelmed, but with more of a sense of excitement as to what is to be accomplished and what shall we see unfold. As someone who enjoys language," Helen wrote, "I love the special language of our religious tradition. For instance, the word epiphany. Epiphany. Isn't it a lyrical sound, holding a certain mystery and magic?" she asked. "It's one of those envelop words, filled with messages and images carried down through the centuries into the depth of cold midwinter comes the imagery of light and love and guidance on the path we travel, all wrapped up in a word, epiphany." What that must have meant in days when light and warmth was not summoned with the flick of a switch. And yet perhaps, she says, there can be even more meaning to an epiphany today, when all the obvious comforts are to be had on demand. And yet the soul still searches alone in the darkness for guidance and light for the days to come. So, Helen wrote, "I pray for all of us that this season of epiphany will enlighten our hearts to see God's will in all that we undertake." Helen is no longer with us, but she is with us in spirit, and I still thank her this day. Epiphany, light and love and guidance. So let's look at the story of Jesus at the wedding feast with those eyes, the eyes of epiphany. Most often, the wedding at Cana story is seen, as we heard, as the first public revelation of God's power working through Jesus. And it is also symbolically interpreted as pointing towards the death and resurrection of Jesus and the gift of his body and his blood, his provision of the wine of life for us, and as such holds a good deal of power and truth. Yet, there is a question that flits through my mind when I hear or read this story that pushes me to reflect further. What happened to make Jesus change his mind? Change his mind about responding to his mother's concern? What happened to make Jesus change his mind, move in a different direction? When his mother said to him, "They have no wine," remember his response was, "Woman, what concern is that to you or me?" And I don't know about you, but that sounds to me like, we need to mind our own business here, Mom. And then Jesus said, "My hour has not yet come." Marriage ceremonies in Cana of Galilee in biblical times were not at all like our Episcopal weddings of today. A wedding party was hands down the event of the year for the community. People looked forward to marriage celebrations for months. The party went on for 7 days. It's said that rabbis abandoned their fasts and students their studies. Everyone brought gifts, and in return, the host was expected to keep his guests, well supplied with food, drink, music and merrymaking for 7 days. The wine running out before the end of those 7 days was more than a minor disappointment. It was a catastrophe. We can't even come close to understanding the ramifications of this disaster with our scattered and mobile and private family structures. It really did matter back then what the neighbors thought, what the community thought. Failure in the realm of hospitality, in that very much shame-based culture, was a family disaster, an extended family disaster, that any true friend would want to help to divert if they could. Being the season of Epiphany, I was moved to ponder that perhaps, just perhaps, Mary was moved to speak to Jesus by another power, besides that of friendship and love and compassion. Recall Mary's willingness to listen to God. Listen and do God's will even before Jesus was born. I imagine by now, some 30 years later, Mary has had even more practice in discerning and doing God's will, having her heart enlightened, as Helen so poetically said for us. What made Jesus change his mind? What helped him to decide it was not his time to keep silent, not his time to rest, as we heard in Isaiah? The answer that I find in our gospel reading is the simple persistence and faithfulness of his mother. Notice Mary's response to Jesus' reply. If her feelings are hurt as mine would be, she does not let that get in her way. She is once again the model of faithfulness to God's will. She relinquishes that special relationship as mother. You know, she insists on nothing. She suggests nothing. She demands nothing. Most often, that is not this mother's response. At that least, suggestions flow from my mouth. But Jesus, don't you think it would be better if, you know? Mary understands, as she has probably understood from the beginning, that something more than a human interaction of mother and son must take place here. God is definitely in the mix. This doesn't mean that Mary is passive. Again, notice how she responds. Even though she has no idea what Jesus might do, she makes space and she allows room for he and God to act. She turns and she speaks to the servants and says, whatever he tells you to do, do it. I don't think this would have been an easy response for Mary. She's pushing Jesus. She's pushing Jesus away from her. At least she's making room for Jesus to be on his way that God intends for him, a way which will not be absent of pain and suffering. As she has already been told by Simeon, she's making room for Jesus to be on his way. Jesus says it wasn't yet time. Mary's response says, I don't accept that. You may be wrong, Jesus. Let's make room for God here. Today, this hour and place might just be your time. This is Mary making room for Jesus to be on his way, God's way, after 30 years of their being together. Imagine with me, Jesus finally hearing God's will in Mary's persistence, in her simple yet clever rebuff of his wish, turning to those servants. For people to begin to know his rebuff of his wish, for people to begin to know and see him as the chosen one of God, he's saying, no, not yet. It's not my time. Imagine Jesus hearing God's will and changing his mind about stepping out to begin the journey God has for him, that journey of pouring out his life for us, living among us, teaching, healing, feeding, forgiving, dying, beginning his journey as God incarnate, God appearing, God made manifest to the world, bringing light and love and guidance. What are you waiting for, Jesus? It is time. As Helen said, epiphany is a magic word. Into the depth of chilly midwinter comes the image of abundance, ultimately 2,100 glasses of wine, and more than enough light and love and guidance for the paths we are called by God to travel, all wrapped up in a word, epiphany. God's guidance is there for us, just as it was for Joseph, for Mary, for Jesus, way before for Isaiah, and all of the prophets, and that back to Jesus's time for shepherds and wise men and John. Thank God that we have their epiphany stories to point the way. May the season of epiphany continue to enlighten our hearts to seek and respond to God's will in all that we undertake, as it brings us light and love and guidance. Amen.